Come get lost with us in a new cinematic universe of kaiju from the studio that would bring you such classics as Snakes on a Train, Transmorphers, and the Sharknado Pentology. That's right, we add Mockbusters to the podcast watch list and self-inflict dozens of hours of knockoffs, starting with this one. A cash-in on Peter Jackson's decades-long labor of love that took less than likely a weekend and a pack of beer to record. This is Kaiju vs. History, King of the Lost World.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your bucking Brontosaurus Scorpion Miles, and joining me is Hurley guarding the hatch, Patrick. Patrick.
Hello.
How you doing? How you holding up after this one?
Not great, Miles. We're looking at King of the Lost World this week. Released December 13th, 2005 to DVD directly to
capitalize. Oh, yeah. I mean, so...
On King Kong. Yeah,
as you mentioned at the top of the show, this is the first of the Asylum oeuvre that we are diving into at this stage in the show. And this was released the same year as this is one of the first the Asylum releases. The company had existed before, but this is under the banner of the Asylum, one of the first two releases.
Well, this is one of the first Mockbusters that they did, maybe not counting the Vampires versus Zombies, which some folks thought was a Mockbuster or cash in on Freddy versus Jason,
or even Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, but the same year they also did a like H.G. Wells War of the Worlds movie to cash in on the Spielberg version of the film that same year. This one probably a little less direct tie to King Kong. In fact, I think you mentioned it does seem like they just kind of thought last time, it's like, hey, what if we put King Kong in this movie?
No, I mean, I said this to you in person, not on the show, but yeah. Well, no, because it wasn't until watching this movie. Oh, yeah. Lost was a huge thing at this time.
Yes. And yeah. 2 minutes into the film, I was like, oh, the plane goes down. And oh, this is just the beginning of Lost.
This entire movie is the beginning of Lost. Even a reference to the others.
Lost is a 2004 TV phenomenon, Miles. And I didn't even think about it.
I didn't either. It did not enter my brain until the first 5 minutes of this movie. I was like, oh, no.
But Lost is right there in the title. King of the Lost World.
The Lost World's an actual dinosaur thing. So we couldn't be forgiven to not think that they were going to be Lost.
Well, it's like, you know, yeah. It's like the idea came afterwards, maybe to add King Kong into it, because it is very much a Lost cash in, which is, you know, makes no sense.
Oh, yeah. No, King Kong was absolutely added in in post. Yeah. I don't even think they reference him being an ape. Yeah. Like the actors themselves.
Right. I mean, it could have been just one of those giant dragon CGI that they thrown in there. But yeah, I skipped over the entire Lost phenomena when it came out. This is a year into that show kind of really, you know, having its first season, and it was already into its second season, I think, at this point. So yeah, the others were a thing, and it was probably as hot as it gets. I don't know when popularity for that show peaked.
Probably peaked, I think, around season 3 or 4, but it stayed pretty hot until the finale.
Did you?
I only watched the first season and never picked it back up.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't waste time on it.
Yeah, I mean, what I saw, I remember thinking, oh, this is pretty good. But also I'm like, this is all right. Well, let's move on. But we're not here to talk about Lost, even though we absolutely will talk about Lost a little bit, because it's one for one in some of these characters. But first, Patrick, I need you to tell me what, if anything, is in a title on this one.
Well, like I said, the title is doing triple duty here, because we point out this movie was made to cash in on King Kong film, hence it being released one day before the wide release of Peter Jackson's King Kong. We put this movie before, or we put this film after King Kong, because technically it premiered in New York in 2005, Peter Jackson's King Kong. But yeah, so King right there in the title, like King Kong, it's a Lost TV riff. So you got the Lost in the title as well. And it's also technically kind of a take on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World, the 1912 book about finding a hidden kind of pocket of dinosaurs. Not really any dinosaurs in this film, but
I mean, you have these weird, like, terror raptors.
You have exactly what I think the CGI studio they contracted already had created.
Oh, 100%.
Big scorpions. You've got like these dragon things and big old monkey.
So,
but this,
for
this,
those,
I was going to say, this movie does take the character names from the Lost World book for the characters here. For whatever reason, I mean, they're not the same characters. They're, you know, I guess mostly professors of like archaeology in the book, or, you know, paleontologists, or what have you, searching in, I think it takes place in Africa. This one, of course, and also on a plateau. And this one is on just a desert island with a bunch of randos and a plane crash. But yeah, that's not the only thing I have to say about this title, Miles. I have more to say.
Oh my! Well, wait, there's more?
It's so weird, but if you look for this film on IMDb, since we started the podcast, because I don't believe it was like this when I added this to the list, you can now find this movie no longer under its release name, but on IMDb, it's called, quote, Syndrome of the Trespasser Island.
What?
End quote. Syndrome of the Trespasser Island. It makes no, that title makes zero sense.
I mean, because the people on the island don't have a syndrome. I guess the people who have been drinking the magic juice might have a syndrome.
Does the island itself have a syndrome?
It's got a plane crash syndrome.
Yeah, it keeps getting planes crash into it. Did the monkey in this film, which is identified as a gigantopithecus, did it cause the planes to crash? Is it what's doing it? I don't know.
They say there's some sort of magnetic field or something. Because remember when the
Miles, I've forgotten more about this movie than I remember. So
when the jet fighters come, they just kind of like veer off course and crash.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Syndrome of the Trespasser Island. I don't quite understand it, and you can find it a few places, like on IMDb. You watched this on Tubi, though, and it was under King of the Lost World there, right?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Pop in there just in case. Yep, King of the Lost World. It does not have any other additional... Do not play.
Please don't.
Yeah. Tubi's like, Tubi, like Tubi loves to do that. Tubi loves to, like, if you just want to see what the movie's about, no, you're in.
Yeah, this counts. This counts as you watching it. You already play.
Yeah, no, it's just King of the Lost World on here.
Okay. And I think I found it one place on YouTube that there's several cut versions of the film edited for YouTube by cutting out, spoiler warning, a little bit of nudity.
Not in my copy.
Yeah, there's like just like 2 or 3 minute differences in the runtime, but you can find it on YouTube a number of places. If you want to watch this movie, I don't recommend it.
No. We'll certainly get to that. I do love that this is such a Lost ripoff that even one of the girls is like a ripoff Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah.
Like, she's 100% higher because she kind of sort of under the right light looks like her.
Yeah. Maybe, Sarah Leaming. I don't really know any of these Sarah,
who plays
actors.
Who I didn't realize her name was Rita. And she's been in, I think, several of these. Maybe they're not all asylums, but they're certainly Mockbuster-esque movies.
There are two, well, we're talking about cast, main male actors, Ed and John, who are played by Jeff Danton and Rhett Giles. I cannot tell them apart. Like the entire film, I was like, which one is which?
No, I couldn't either. So and similar. Like looking at their list, like a lot of them have been in the exact same movies. All three of those actors have been in some of the exact same movies by the same director. So I'm guessing they're all buds.
Yes. Yeah, this movie is directed by Lee Scott, who I believe will go on. I don't know if he's done any other kaiju films for Asylum, but has done some other Asylum films. And Pirates of Treasure Island, Piranha Sharks, Transmorphers.
Typically, they hire one actor who has, you know, has been in something of merit.
Yep, something put on the marquee.
And that's Bruce Boxleitner in this case, who you may remember from Tron.
You might. I know him, of course, from Babylon 5.
Yes. Also a main character in Babylon 5. And I think was in the recent animated thing, too. So still doing that role.
Yes, indeed. I love Boxleitner, and he's honestly acting up a storm here, which makes it even funnier
because
everything is terrible around him and he's treating it so seriously.
But the thing is, his lines aren't good. So like he's acting, which is fine. What he's doing on screen is not bad, but because he's in this movie, it just looks outlandish.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know much about Lost, but he's playing what's the bald guy on Lost name?
Locke.
Yeah, he's playing the Locke character in this show. He's Lieutenant Challenger, and
I don't think so, and I don't think they say his name until later, and so they just call him Lieutenant Challenger. I'm like, wait, that's the name we went with?
Yeah, yep, it is. Yeah, that he walks around with, I think what we find out is like a football, like the nuclear briefcase, right?
Yes.
Attached to his arm. And yeah, Bruce Boxleitner really, really acting up a storm for no reason in this dime store knockoff movie. To give a quick recap, we've talked about the movie a little bit, but you can still find this movie listed on Asylum's website. They have like a section that lists every movie they've ever done. And the quote for this one is, "In this modern retelling of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's fantasy action adventure classic, a commercial airliner crashes deep in the heart of the Amazon." Wasn't it an island? Am I crazy, Miles?
It was an island.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just wrong right there, unless the Amazon is also an island. Now the survivors must face a mysterious and hostile world inhabited by giant scorpions, dragons, and a simian beast that stands 10 stories tall. That part's true. But I was going crazy.
Technically, yeah.
When I read this, I was like, were they in the Amazon? No, they were not. What else happens in this movie? They do find the others here who are like a cult, I guess.
Yeah, and no one really, like, they're all white people, and most of them were crashed. So, like,
I was about to say, is this the other plane?
Yeah, there's several planes, and there's never any indication of how anyone got to be part of this cult, like, originally. But before we even get to that, for those who may not know who the Asylum is, they are a company known mostly, not entirely, but mostly doing mockbuster movies at a very low budget, direct to video, before the anticipated release of a tentpole big budget blockbuster movie comes out. Or they do one in response to a surprise big movie. Weirdly enough, you would think that they would hire like really talented people who are good at like kind of parody stuff. They don't want that. I remember reading an article on Cracked like about a decade ago from a screenwriter who was, I can't remember who it was, because it was someone whose movies I was familiar with, who had pitched a couple things for The Asylum. They don't want self-aware things. They are basically a front for like their buddies to write these bad scripts of like their versions of these big movies. And I do not understand how they continue to make money.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's
I
mean, one
I
of
do,
those.
But I don't.
Falling up fallacies where I feel like if they start to try and then they fail, then it'll be more of a failure than if they're not trying, you know, if they're kind of phoning in these cloned productions with, you know, shot in Burbank in someone's backyard over the course of like a weekend, and that movie fails, there's no, they don't have skin in the game, so it doesn't matter. And they're producing at this point, I think on average of about 10 movies a year.
Well, so my thing is, you don't have to change necessarily the budget of your movies. Mm-hmm. Just get a scriptwriter who has some skin in the game. That's, I mean, if it's a bad movie, but it's like, I mean, they sort of leaned into it with Sharknado. That's when they were like, they were clearly a self-aware franchise with that one. But like, I mean, if you had like, looking at the website, Transmorphers Mech Beasts, if you have someone who's got like a little skin in the game, maybe knows a little bit about the Transformers franchise, and just writes a solid script, I don't see the threat of that. But no, we get The Little Mermaid with Steve Guttenberg, so whatever.
So the year after Sharknado came out, which I think is probably their peak of 2013, but in 2014, they had 18 movies release, including Sharknado 2, their television show on the Sci-Fi Network, Z Nation.
Which
wasn't terrible.
No, it's like, well, again, if you try, it's okay. It's not. Yeah,
it's not good.
We watched some of it for The More You Nerd. I think you were on that episode.
Yeah, it's not. I was surprised because I saw the Asylum name, and we are going to be doing.
It also has a spinoff.
A few different, actually, series of kaiju-like Asylum films. They did a couple of knockoffs of the Pacific Rim films, which the title always makes me laugh. Atlantic Rim.
I don't know. Sounds end like up on Cleveland MST3K. Steam.
Yeah. Yes, I'm very excited about rewatching those on MST3K as well. Although they only did the first one. They have a Mega Shark series, which I think is four films at this point. And I wouldn't add them in normally because they have literally dozens of mega animal movies. But this series, I think, goes further into the kind of kaiju elements of these films, because the first one is Mega Shark versus
Giant Octopus,
and then it's Crocosaurus, and then the third one is versus Colossus.
Third one's Mecha Shark,
yes, which is kind of like a Mecha Godzilla.
It's definitely thing. Following that Godzilla thing. Yeah. I'm excited about the one that hasn't been released yet.
Oh no, which one's that?
Mega Shark versus Moby Dick.
Oh no, I haven't seen that. We have to add a fifth Mega Shark movie.
And some of those are sequels. Like I think there was a Colossus movie by itself, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it's not Colossus. Some of these have prior had movies. Huh.
There is eventually. Oh, and in the last couple of years, there's been an ape versus mecha ape, an ape versus monster subseries, which is directly a Godzilla versus Kong kind of ripoff. But a lot of their most famous films have a crossover film in a movie called, gosh, it was on our list just a second ago, Apocalypse 2018. Is that the title?
Sure.
No, I just did a search for Apocalypse in all their movies.
Are you talking about the 2025 Armageddon one?
Yeah, Armageddon. That's what I meant to say. They have so many movies with Apocalypse in the title. It's 2025 Armageddon. From 2022 is a crossover film that has Mega Shark and a Sharknado and a bunch of their monsters in like a literal MCU style crossover event.
Which is and it's also apparently like super meta as well. I'm looking forward to it, I guess. Yeah, this is the bed we've made. And this sounds like it could be a hoot and a holler, but here's the thing. At times, these movies absolutely are. They are a lot of times certainly a movie you can have a beer, you can razz with your friends. That's what these movies are really bred for. Most of them ended up, I mean, they were direct to video, but they're also premiering on the Sci-Fi Channel after a certain point in time.
A lot of them, yeah.
And it's certainly to the degree where if you see the words The Asylum pop up before a movie, you know you're in for a specific ride. That said, that kind of fun is not what awaits us in this movie.
I think they both get better and worse. I think there are worse Asylum films than the one we are reviewing today. I think there are better, of course.
I mean, this will continue to be a problem with Asylum movies. It certainly is a problem when you are supposed to, like, I guess, have Native people and you just make an excuse as to why there's not. This entire cast looks like they were ordered out of an Abercrombie and Fitch catalog from a decade prior.
It goes beyond that. And I've put this in my section of the film of like what just didn't work in the film. And yeah, the natives, all white natives in like tribal makeup. It's like, why are they doing that? One,
well, you,
two, were there just no people of color on the planes?
There's one guy on that set.
there were a couple of actresses of color on the plane that we follow that crashes, but they do not have a large part in the film.
No. No one really has a large part in the film except for like the core four, and really the core three, because Lieutenant Challenger really doesn't become a real thing until much later. Mutt and Jeff, our two male leads, are not just interchangeable in their looks. Their roles. I thought one was supposed to have a romance with the main protagonist woman, and he doesn't. And the whole thing is weird. And they're written so, I mean, they are stock. I mean, like, I'm going to say a line and look out into the distance. This is high school drama level writing here.
And directing and editing. There are so many flubbed lines in the final.
Yes, cut of there film are.
Where they're just like, you want to take that gift? No. Okay. Let's move on.
No. You were bang on, because there's a whole sequence where this girl's like, I can't move my legs, as she is kicking. And the camera doesn't pan up quick enough for us not to see that she's kicking her legs.
Okay. Yeah. I missed that part. There's
also this girl Gloria, who I briefly had thought might be our Ann Darrow. She is thrown from the plane at the beginning. Yeah, no, she is the opening kill. She's tossed from the plane, but in such a way that she lands like gracefully on this branch, like she was just kind of sleeping. She does not look like she was like sucked from a plane and landed violently on a tree, which is how she should look. And then we get our first look at the titular King of the Lost World.
King, yes. Gigantotithopes. No,
whatever he is, he's ugly. It's a terrible, terrible CGI / maybe guy in a suit mix that looks awful, especially when he turns his head later in the movie where it just looks like a blocky polygon.
Spiky hair. Indeed.
Yeah, he just snatches Gloria and eats her. So I guess, I mean, like the ape only has maybe 2 full minutes of screen time.
Well, and there's not much screen time in this movie in total. It says it runs 1 hour 20, but the credits are 5 minutes at the end, and in the beginning there's 2 minutes of stock footage credits as well. So we're really cutting it down to hour 13, hour 12.
I don't, whatever it is too much for one. And I mean, there's not much to say about this movie. That's kind of why we're kind of explaining, the Asylum so much doing with their movies, because I mean, this is, I mean, pound for pound, a lost kind of riff until they briefly run into the others, which are supposed to be natives. Again, we see they're clearly a bunch of white people speaking, I think, Spanish or a mixture of Spanish. Maybe it's Portuguese. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
But they just got out of their fraternity pledge meeting.
Well, because Lieutenant Challenger understands the language and can speak it. But the thing is like, okay, we understand when they're captured, they're going to sacrifice a couple people. And then they make some other ones, most of the women, drink this date rape drug, and they are now mindless followers of this cult. I still don't understand where these people come from, how this whole thing started. I mean, is it just a bunch of drunk idiots who like looked at the monkey and was like, okay, yeah, that's that guy's the boss. We follow the boss.
We
got
to sacrifice to the giant monkey, I guess. Yeah. But yeah. Why do they have to like rip that one lady's shirt open when they only put makeup on her forehead? That part, well,
yeah, like, so, I mean, part of that is for the artistic choice. You know, in film, certain things need to be done a certain way. And to get the mise-en-scene, of this sequence, it just had to happen. No, it's completely pointless. It is purely there so they can say, hey, we have some nudity in there, so please buy our movie.
Yeah,
because when you're looking at the box, it'll say, you know, contain graphic violence, nudity, blah blah blah. So they're 100%
terrible CGI.
they're 100% hope. Oh, an action adventure movie. Oh, and it's got some nudity. Okay, like they are definitely wanting the casual, like, viewer, or the casual Walmart shopper.
I was about to say,
these movies go.
You gotta capture people's attention with some box art, which it's not great. It's not terrible, great, but
it's not terrible.
It's not the CGI from the movie at the very least.
And honestly, if Kong looked like that, or whatever his name looked like that, it wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it'd still be a bad movie, but like Kong wouldn't be as bad.
And there were some, honestly, there were some special features where if I found this for like $5 or less, I would probably pick it up. There is a cast and crew commentary for the entire film where supposedly there's like six people doing a commentary with like one microphone.
Okay, so that might be worth the $5 alone.
Supposedly very terrible commentary. And there are some behind the scenes featurettes, which no one has uploaded to YouTube, so I could not find them for this review, and I didn't want to buy a DVD. But yeah, one of them is about the special effects, which I would love to hear. One of the special effects supervisor, Andrew Tucker, who did some actual good movies. He did special effects on Blade, for example. This is from a review of the DVD. I'm getting all this information, and yeah, there's outtakes. Like back in the day when you bought a DVD, there'd be like honestly a number of pretty cool features. I feel like that's all gone today.
Oh, no. Depending on these days, depending on where you're getting your Blu-rays from, that some of them now, because it's now veering more towards, oh, more people want to get physical stuff because things popping off and on streaming, they're anything coming out now is usually getting like packed to the gills, like, yeah. And of movies that like you don't think, like, I have a 4K 3 Blu-ray set of Rad.
Oh boy.
Like these things are getting like box editions. I also have a 4K set of like Sidekicks with Jonathan Brandis and Chuck Norris. Like these movies are getting some TLC. Do I?
Classic movie.
Oh, absolutely. But no, I mean, I'll, you know, you still your Criterions, your Arrows, who are putting, but yes, for a good chunk of the early till mid tens, you were not seeing that as much at all. And especially not on your streamers, with the exception of like, I think HBO, because they bought stuff from Criterion, they have some special features on that on Max.
Yeah. So I think we should get to rating, reviewing this movie. Like we said, there's not much else to say about it. And I couldn't find much about the making of the film, which I always enjoy sharing with our audience, like, you know, stories from set and what have you. I can't find Bruce Boxleitner talking up this movie, believe it or not. For personal enjoyment, you know, I don't know if I've made it clear so far in this episode, but I don't really like the Asylum films. To me, it is just, they're so indicative of around 2010 kind of yucky films that are meant to cash in on the so bad it's good movement,
right?
But they're never so bad they're good, you know. They never reach that threshold for me, at least none of the ones that I've seen. Yeah, this movie was made way before Sharknadoes and your Meth Gators and those kind of like knockoffs, which I think might have a little bit of fun to them, but
for sure. I mean, you don't watch a movie like Meth Gator, which is obviously a take on Cocaine Bear, yeah, and think maybe I'm going to change my life today.
But yeah, well, I think when we get there and when the studio starts getting attention for those kind of hammy films, they might be more interesting as a so bad it's good. This one is just, you know, they were looking to cash in and they made a a really throwaway movie that does feel like they made it in a weekend. I'm sure it took several weeks, but looking at our scale, this ranks very low for me, even for a kaiju flick, even though I think some Asylum films are going to rate lower than this. So I'm giving a 2 out of 10. I think it might be downhill for some of the movies we have, but I don't ever want to watch this again. Miles, what about you?
I'm right there with you, bud. This is a 2 out of 10 for me. I find I can have fun with some mockbusters, especially ones that are self-aware that I was talking about. I find what The Asylum generally does to be deeply cynical and late stage capitalism of it all. I think that, like, yes, you have stuff like Sharknado that in and of itself can be fun to a degree. It leans into what it is. But a lot of these are not that. And a lot of these aren't really meant to be fun. They're not really even meant to really be movies. And I find, like you said, something so yucky about it. And this movie is not entertaining. It's not fun. Nothing about this is vaguely redeeming. Like, is it watchable? Is it more watchable than, like, your Naked Monster? Sure, to a degree.
Yeah, no, but those are right there on the same level for me.
But yeah, they're. I mean, and they are. I mean, neither is a movie I ever want to watch again. And there are Asylum movies that I do think have an element of fun to them. They sometimes, Broken Clock is right twice a day.
I was about to say, 2 out of 24 of the Asylum movies might be fun. You are correct.
Right. But yeah, I absolutely did. I had a terrible time. You've noticed we barely talked about the actual movie. We don't have any information about the making of it, and I'm fine.
I was about to say, the less that said, maybe the better.
Yeah. I am totally. I've heard some people, I'll talk about this, and then people will say, like, well, yeah, you love, like, the movie Ed Wood, and you like some of the old Ed Wood stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but not because he was making high art. I appreciate the character Ed Wood from the Tim Burton movie, which is different from Ed Wood the guy. And that's a very discernible thing. And yes, I think some of those old Plan 9 movies are kind of fun in a goofy way, but, like, this is a very, very different thing to me.
What about the technical aspect of the film?
Of the film?
Miles, someone, and I'm sure I can look at IMDb and tell you, two people, not including Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, wrote this film. Carlo De Los Rios and David Michael Latt.
Yeah,
they sat down, penned a paper, put it together, then actors came. There was probably a table read for this.
I am not one to harp on CGI. I have made it known on this podcast. I've made it known on The More You Nerd when I talk about stuff on there. CGI never bothers me. But lazy, inartistic stuff without any care does bother me. And the ape in this movie specifically is terrible. And it's terrible in a time where, like, I've seen cheap movies from this era. There were still a couple of Full Moon movies coming out. Like, you could have done something better. I felt like they were just using somebody else's assets or something. And I don't know
how much that was a thing in 2005, but it does feel like they just took the assets kind of that they had ready to go, like, loaded up on their computer, and it's like, sure, dragons, scorpions, King Kong.
Right. I mean, the script is terrible. The actors are wallpaper. I mean, they are just dressing the screen. They do not act for the most part. The not Evangeline Lilly is not bad, but she has nothing to do. Obviously, the one name actor, and they usually have a couple of, I don't want to say washed up, but certainly actors who at one point in their career were popular pop up in this and in future movies. Julia White's in a couple.
Sarah Connor, that actress, is in a few movies from the Terminator. Yes. Linda Hamilton, I think.
Linda Hamilton's in some Asylum movies?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no. Honey, was the rent due? Yeah, you have money.
No,
but this is a 3 out of 10 for me. I kind of want to give it lower, but, like, it is something on screen. It is digestible, but it is like a week old sandwich. So, like, it might be okay because it's been in the fridge, but, like, I won't chance it. This movie sucks.
Yeah, she was in a film that we are not going to cover called Bermuda Tentacles, which is a knockoff of the Battleship movie.
Really? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you got to make a knockoff of the movie that was like, hey, with like $10 million to begin with.
Already terrible. I'm right there with you. I'm giving it a 3 out of 10 as well for the technical. Besides the CGI being bad, which is, I mean, I just kind of expected for this movie.
Right.
If it's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World, why are there not dinosaurs? I feel like dinosaur assets would be super easy to come up with. Then you just show them running away from a triceratops. You show like a raptor eating someone. Boom. There you go. We're in Lost World territory. And there's tons of dinosaurs in Peter Jackson's King Kong. So it would have also made it seem more like that movie. But I think the answer is so obvious. They just didn't have dinosaurs pre-made. You know, the flub lines, actually, I really enjoy in this movie. I feel like the actors are doing a great job, but they might have only had so many takes, you know, to do a scene. And we are seeing the best of all their takes. So it makes me laugh.
Let's put best in sarcastic air quotes, shall we?
Well, it makes me laugh to think that the other ones have more flubs, but there's also a lot of very abrupt cuts and edits all over this. So 3 is pretty generous, but I still feel pretty confident. It is really saved by, like I said, Bruce Boxleitner, who's given really nothing to do in the entire film, but is still a consummate professional, coming to set every day and acting like this is a big budget Hollywood movie. He's given it his all. Everyone else, you know, unfortunately, it makes everyone else look even worse, like up next to him. But for its importance, where it stands as a piece of art in the kaiju canon, this movie can be deleted, and I don't think it would be very missed. It is like important to us as the first of the Asylum movies that we're looking at, but it's a good lost ripoff. But no kaiju fan out there really needs to bother finding this, even though it is very findable. You can find it on Tubi. You can find it at 5 different places. People have put it on YouTube, but don't. just take our word for it. So 1 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
So this is where we are going to veer.
Okay. Oh, no.
I do think it being the first Asylum movie, and I guess making enough money from something to garner more things to be made, does give it some value historically. That said, I agree with you. This movie could be deleted off the face of the earth. And I mean, I still stand by all movies should be available. Nothing should be lost, blah, 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 blah. Yes, I stand by that. However, if this movie were somehow deleted from our memories and was lost to time, nothing of value would be missing. I am not going to go super crazy and give this, like, you know, oh, it's the first, you know, big Asylum mockbuster, so it gets a 6 or 7 out of 10. No. I'm not doing something like that. But I am going to give it a 4 just because of its place in history for being that movie, even though it's largely forgotten. No one ever thinks about this movie, nor should they. Absolutely do not go find this movie. It's terrible. And I mean, it's not even, like I said before, it's not even terrible in a way that, like, oh, I'm going to have a beer with some friends and we're going to watch a bad movie. No. Like, look, even though I hated it, like, I get where Patrick's coming from in his enjoyment of Yeti. And there are other Asylum movies that are fun to watch with beers and friends and making fun ofs. But making fun ofs, Jesus. But this is not one of them. Avoid this movie at all costs, but it does have some historical significance as the first big Asylum mockbuster.
Okay, well, that brings your final score to a 3 and mine to...
Yeah,
three.
I didn't go too crazy there, two? So that's still a 3.
Yeah, mine's to a 2. And like I said, I think that's actually going to be pretty high for some of these Asylum movies for me. And
started off this decade so strong.
Our podcast final score, I don't know, what is it going to be? You're a flat 2 and I'm a flat 3. I always forget when this happens.
We round up, buddy.
It's a 2.5. We're going up. Yeah, so that means podcast final is a 3. Miles saving this thing a whole point.
I mean, look, a 3 is nothing to be proud of. So, like, you know, yeah, wear that with a badge of honor.
Yeah.
In the Lost World.
Right. So that's going to do it for us. Where can folks find us if they want to talk of the Lost World or other?
If you want to talk about King of the Lost World, don't. However, if you want to talk about anything else, with us. You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this month, at Kaiju Versus History. You can go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, and let us know what you think. You can check out our Letterboxd Kaiju Versus History account and see all of our reviews and watch our list of films. You can also go to cosmiccrit.com, click on that Discord link, and join the Cosmic Crit Discord. We have a Kaiju Versus History channel. Patrick are there. Patrick and I are there almost every single day. You can talk to us in real time if that's something that sounds fun to you. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next time where we find out if one boy has the power to befriend a giant turtle and if that turtle's friendship with old children is enough to empower him to stand up to a bully kaiju once and for all. That is right. Tune in next time for History versus Gamera the Brave.